Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 153 for May 6th, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp, and we have no news to talk about this week. It was completely slow. I mean, we've still got Google I.O. to come, and we've got WWDC, and we've got Microsoft Build. Nothing happened. It's just going to be, I mean, really honestly, it's going to be the shortest podcast ever. Right, Jamie?
Just one little thing. One little thing I kind of wanted to bring up. We won't spend any time on it, but
really quickly?
There was this accessibility thing on the Kindle app for iOS.
No.
Yeah, it actually works. I want to say, if Lisa Salinger didn't break that story on Twitter, she was really early in my timeline. I'm not sure who may have tweeted the first instance of this, but...
Yep. Now, if you listen carefully, yep, there they are, off in the distance. It's the marching band, and here they come. Yes, we said it on the show that if this app ever became accessible... we would have a parade. So, yes, welcome to the Thank You Amazon for Making the Kindle App Accessible Day Parade. All right, there we got some floats there, got books attached to them. I think they've got Braille on them, but you can't reach up and read it.
Right, yeah. Actually, the cool thing was I had bought a Kindle book for the PC, that sort of kind of halfway workable thing for a while. And when I connected or, you know, got the app going, it just showed up right there. I had actually forgotten I had it. It's like, oh, wow, a pleasant surprise. A book I actually purchased that I have been reading and actually subscribed to Macworld, which is kind of cool. Before I realized, now this is an interesting thing, before I realized that it was available on NFB Newsline, but the content on NFB Newsline appears to be different than in the magazine. And I mentioned this on a mailing list, and Dr. Carter said he noticed the same thing with the New York Times. He has a subscription to the New York Times, and what shows up on NFB Newsline is different from what he gets in the subscription.
That's interesting. So is the content itself different, or is it that there's less of it on NFB Newsline, or are you maybe looking at different months where what's on NFB Newsline is from before?
I actually went back an issue because I was looking at, interestingly enough, the June issue of Macworld in May. But whenever I go back a previous issue, I didn't see, because I thought maybe Kindle had just, I don't know, given me a different version or something, because you get a 30-day trial, which is kind of cool, of your magazines. They're like $1.99 a month to subscribe to a magazine. But I don't exactly know what's up. Some of the stuff on the Macworld.com website is in the NFB Newsline app. So I'm wondering if they're pulling blog articles or if there's like free content that's available.
Ooh, paywall versus free. That could be.
Yeah.
That would make sense, actually. So maybe the NFB Newsline is pulling from some things that are perhaps on the New York Times site or that are published articles on Macworld, whereas the magazine, you get the entire thing because you've paid for it.
Yeah, the content licensing content could always kind of change. That'd be...
Yeah.
Yeah. And that happens a lot with a lot of publications because they want to drive you back to the site or they want to have you go to where they can control ads or click on ads. And then some people like to promote their more direct paid content situation. So the magazine is where a lot more material would show up or more in depth. Like you'll get an excerpt or a little bit of a couple of paragraphs. And then if you went to the actual magazine article, you'd get this long 5, 6, 7 page thing.
So two things I've noticed, and I will continue to play around a little more and see, or if one of our listeners can and shed some light, I would appreciate that as well, It doesn't appear that links in the magazine are actual hyperlinks. So VoiceOver doesn't say link and then take you to the link. So I'm not sure that there's a way, which is unfortunate because, I mean, in Macworld, there's lots of links to apps and different things might want to access. And in the table of contents view, other than clicking on an article, I don't see a way to go back where you were. So you were reading along, you want to view table of contents, you go to that, and I don't see a convenient way to get back to your previous location.
So in other words, if you open the article again after looking at the table of contents, you will have lost your place in that article. Is that right?
That's the way it appears to me, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if any listeners have ideas on that, certainly let us know, resources@saratalk.com, or send us an iReport through your iOS or Android device. So one site that I really love and visit frequently is Lifehacker. And they usually have stuff that absolutely works and have some great tips and so on. This time they got it wrong a little bit. They have an article saying, hey, guess what? Kindle for iOS can make Siri read your books aloud. Well, sort of. So they talk about VoiceOver and how you can turn it on. And the article says, well, but you still have to move your finger down the page to look at each line of content rather than having it totally read aloud. And who's
somebody
going to
didn't
use
learn
this?
The gestures.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, who's going to use this?
VoiceOver tutorial was
who's
right there
really
in settings.
Turn on VoiceOver? Well, the really cool thing is this totally goes down as history as the first and perhaps only time that I've ever looked at comments on an article and been happy. Because usually people are saying idiotic things that make my blood boil. And this time, one guy was like, you're doing it wrong. Two finger flick down will start reading for you. And
awesome.
He also points out, the guy had said, well, nobody's actually going to reuse VoiceOver unless they need it. You know, what are you talking about? And the guy points out how you can use triple click home. You can set up that shortcut. And he does this all the time where he will turn on VoiceOver, do this two finger flick down, have it read stuff. And then when he's done with it and wants to go back to using his phone the way he normally does, he just turns VoiceOver off.
Yeah, the mainstream coverage was strange. And this Lifehacker article was kind of a good signpost of that. And it's really good to see that kind of stuff is happening, that others that maybe outside our community are telling others about how great accessibility is. And I mean, look what happened with Flexi and others. You know, it's not just for those people over there anymore. Oh my gosh, I might actually be able to use this myself. Whoa.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty cool to see people taking notice of this kind of thing.
I didn't like that article title, though. Good gravy. That just really... That just really
well,
got
the
it
article
wrong.
Title basically did kind of, I mean, people think of, they hear the Samantha voice and they think Siri.
Yeah.
And I kind of expected that to happen. So people may not ever talk about VoiceOver per se, but the fact that Siri talks to them does, in my mind, make it a little easier for some people to understand how a phone could be used by a blind person, because they see it talk to them all the time. And so it's not much of a stretch to imagine, oh, well, okay, you know, Siri just reads your screen for you. I get it.
Siri made speech recognition cool. When that came back out around the 4S, that's what I said on Twitter, was it took Apple to make that technology not seem silly or geeky or stupid. However, walking down a hallway at a hotel or sitting at a restaurant watching people use Siri, yes, that actually can be very, very silly and stupid. But it's not dorky and cool the same way that people are starting to really go after, you know, Google Glass.
Yeah. By the way, if you did not know this, this is certainly going to be a great tip for you. If you've got DocuScan Plus, and by the way, if you don't, you should, because it's really, really great. But if you do currently have it, and you've got your Kindle app, You can send previously scanned documents right from DocuScan Plus to your Kindle app or your Kindle keyboard hardware device. If you've got one of those, check out the link in the show notes to find out how to do that.
Along with the flood of excited tweets and so forth that I saw the day that the story really broke about the Kindle app being accessible, there was an article from the National Federation of the Blind, their comment, and it kind of felt like they were raining on the parade just a little bit. I'm kind of interested in your guys' take on this. Basically, what their comment was, yeah, that's great that the app's accessible, but we still got a long way to go because their hardware devices are not yet accessible. And in order for it to be truly a viable educational tool, that needs to happen. So we're still going to fight.
I feel like the points that they made were valid in that there's still some work that needs to be done and that kind of thing. But I feel like there wasn't really a thank you. It was more like a, yeah, thank you, but. And the thank you was sort of, you owed us this and have for a long time, and, you know, thanks for joining the party and stuff, but you still have a way to go. I feel like it's okay to still talk about the work that needs to be done, but I think it's important to truly acknowledge that a lot of work has been done, because this app, I mean, it does have Braille support. It does have the ability to do highlighting and looking up words in the dictionary and things that haven't been available on the Kindle keyboard and things that aren't available in the same way, even in other book apps like the Nook app and so on. So it seems to me that Amazon took some time, it might have been more time than we preferred, but they took some time to do this as right as they could, and to have the NFB article kind of shrug that off and say, all right, that's a start. Keep going. I don't like it.
If I want to be catty, not that I ever do that on this show at all. If no. I want to be catty, I would ask Jamie, hey, Jamie, how's that Blio app accessibility working out for you? If I wanted to be catty and remind everybody of the launch of Blio and what was told was going to become later accessible, and if I wanted to be catty, I would say that.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm really not. And full disclosure, once again, I am a member of the Assistive Technology Trainers Board for the National Federation of the Blind, so I'm not always a full-on card-carrying member of any organization. I belong to everybody and promote everybody. But with that said, I felt a little let down here in a way, because every product is going to have a 1.0. Again, I'm pointing back to Google Glass and everybody ripping the Explorer edition apart. That's a developer edition. And so you get into this concept of shipping and fixing on the run, or shipping and good enough. And, you know, Amazon put this as the very first thing on their release note on the iOS store. This was number one, right?
It was a big deal for them to have done this.
And they've gone out of their way and done some PR, and they've responded, because people have been like, well, we did all those protests and everything, and they're just evil. You know, okay, no, they're doing some stuff. And I think there's a way of being critical while still being friendly to the situation. And I think to go in a direction where you continue to continuously just beat someone up over and over and over again, yeah, we got it. I mean, at the beginning of this year, it was iBooks and Google Books. We're approaching convention for both, and now we've got Nook and Amazon. This is changing so fast, and it's the same way that I get upset sometimes over people making overarching statements about Android accessibility. That's today. Tomorrow, it's going to be totally different. And it seems to be getting better every release, not worse. So give them some room. Give them breathing room.
Exactly. I think people have got to learn to let go of their bitterness and what has happened in the past. That doesn't move things forward today. And I think our own buddy Brannon actually expressed these thoughts very eloquently in his blog post talking about how he felt about Kindle accessibility in general and the NFB's response to that. So again, check the show notes if you want to look at Buddy's article, and I certainly think you should.
My comment is buy stuff. Buy a book. Buy or go ahead and subscribe to a magazine that maybe you couldn't get in anywhere else. Go ahead and put your money where your mouth is here. If they've done this, they've released this thing, let's take advantage of it. I'd like to have a feedback email address to send them saying, hey, love the app. Talk to me a little bit about hyperlinks. Can we make those work? Or am I doing something wrong and they really do work and I just don't know it? You know, I want to dialogue with them, but let's take advantage of what's there.
Absolutely.
So we've got several resources here. Justin Romack has written an article. Buddy, we'll link to that one as well. And a gesture reference guide. So definitely, there's no way we can talk about everything in our show notes this week. We've put a bunch of contacts, a bunch of links and stuff in here. So check it out at your leisure.
So other stuff did happen recently, aside from the Kindle update. It's good to have that to talk about and good to have nice stuff happening in addition to that, like the update to Flexi. Happy typing, everyone. They've just released another update that will allow for one-handed typing. And they mentioned one thing that, having used Flexi from the very beginning, it's really cool to see this. They talked about, you know, just a year ago, it took a minute to load Flexi for the first time on a device. And now it's like a couple of seconds. So, I mean, look at how far they've come in this 1 year, and they've had tremendous success both in the blindness community and in mainstream. So again, happy typing and way to go, guys.
I don't know if I've actually said this on a podcast or just thought about saying it, but as someone who's been kind of a slow adopter of Flexi, the advantage to that for me is I can look at the updates and see that they have been astounding. If you are a regular user, you might not recognize that as much, but if you don't play with it a lot and maybe you miss an update or two and then you actually go to the latest version, the work those developers have done is incredible.
That's another one of those where we interviewed them on the floor of NFB last year, and to think about where that app was when we met with them in Dallas versus where it is now is astounding.
Yeah, they hadn't quite released it to the App Store yet when we got our first interview with them. They were showing it to people on the floor and kind of getting the buzz going, and it was shortly after convention that they released it for the first time ever. And yeah, here we are now.
And they're looking for new beta testers for Flexi for Android. If you're interested, make sure you go by the old Flexi place and see what they've got going on. Because your personality may lead you to want to choose whether you want to use Flexi on Android or iOS. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Mr. Steve Sautrin, our own host of Serospectives, was on the Tech Doctor podcast with Dr. Robert Carter, who's been on our own That Android Show and others. Also, he's been on Serospectives. They sit down and talk about more of the iOS versus Android kind of debate in a more interesting way, because there's some speculation here about that your personality might actually affect on the type of platform that you feel more comfortable with. And that's actually a very interesting concept. Certainly, everybody has their own edge use cases. And as I've said to others on staff offline, one of these days I need to sit down and write my blog post, Every Assistive Technology Expert is Wrong, Including Me, and Here's Why. It really does matter on the person. I get mad at the post-PC era. I hate that phrase, because nothing has been more personal computing than the device you're holding in your hands. And your personality does play into that. What do you want it to do? What do you do most often? Do those apps exist on this platform or another? Is there more of an interesting reason for me to be on X versus Y? Or, as I've said, if anybody wants to do podcasting on technology, you really do need to have both. You really need to be open to exploring everything, Windows, Mac, iOS, Android, because that's the question you're going to get the most often is this right for me? And then you have to sit down and look at the person and decide what kind of sort of works for them, and to give them some encouragement or to tell them, hey, go over to Best Buy and turn that on and see if you like it.
After reading all of those really intense, heavy-duty books on theology and religion and whatever on all of these accessible apps, you might just want to play a game. And if you're a Windows user, you can now play the latest version of Change Reaction. It came out on the Mac a few months back, and I was raving about how much fun it was to play on the Mac, and now you can do the same on Windows. So those guys over at Draconis Entertainment do a great work, and so definitely check that out if you're interested.
For you Android folks, here's an interesting new app called Top Reader. And this is an OCR app for your Android device. You should be able to take pictures. And I think in reading the article here, it looks like it's doing a constant video feed. So it's going to give you feedback about, you know, tilt to the left, tilt to the right, forward, backward, what have you, in order to get the whole document into the focus area. So Top Reader is out for Android. It's going to be out for iOS at a later date. The price on this is about £400 UK. Not sure what that converts to in US.
A lot.
So this is definitely not a casual purchase. We're kind of back in the KNFB reader sort
cheaper than that. It's more like the price of a standalone handheld video magnifier.
Mm. Okay. So if this works brilliantly, it might be worth it, because I see people talking about trying to do this all the time, and there are devices that are meant to make it easier, where, say, you put your iPhone in this stand scan thing, for instance, and take pictures. So people are trying to do this much more cheaply, but I don't know how well all that works and if this is going to be worth the price point. You know, is it going to be as easy to use as you would hope for just kind of a point and click thing, and then you get full accessibility to whatever document that is.
I mean, you got to justify that you're doing that a lot, and the only technology that you have near you is said smartphone
slash
tablet.
Right. This is not a casual purchase, but it is available, so.
Definitely. And who knows, it's introductory price, not to go back to the Flexi story, but Flexi cost when it started and now it doesn't. So, you know, sometimes you're paying to be an early adopter and help them through the process. Again, we're back to that Amazon, here's where we started, here's where we're going thing. Hey, this sounds like a reoccurring theme, not that we planned out the show that way, but we also have to think about some people who are listening to our show are not huge tech geeks like ourselves. Of course, we have jobs, so that forces us to do so. But the others out there who sometimes write in to us and say, okay, can you describe what this is or break this down a little bit more, because I don't really know what that term means or what that situation is. They might not necessarily feel great using some of the more loosely documented applications that are out there. And so for those or people who are new to blindness or people who have print handicapped issues reading text, NetEcho has internet speech. This company's been around for a while, actually. I've had conversations with them going all the way back to DARS. These guys read the web page or over the phone, or they even have something that allows to work with web and web plugins. There's a link to the free webinar here. So if you want to learn more about a player that you might not hear often about, check this link out in the show notes at serotalk.com.
Being a book reader, I love the resource guides that are coming out these days. Larry Lewis has written one for the iPad, if you are a parent or a teacher. And the iPad is a great educational tool. At the school where I do music therapy, about one day a week right now, the teachers have all gotten iPads in the classroom, and they had some training on them, and it is absolutely revolutionizing the way they work with special needs children. It is they were playing with an app the other day that had running water, and I kid you not, it was so clear sounding. Actually, it was like a pond or something, and the water was splashing, and I almost wanted a towel because it was like, I'm going to get wet here in a minute. I couldn't believe
how clear
that was.
Somebody cover up that iPad. Something liquid's going to get on it.
I went to Iron Man 3 last week in a theater with some amazing surround sound, and there's a scene where they roll this huge container, but it's off screen. So it starts behind you on your left and rolls up to the center of the screen. It was so loud and so real. People's heads were turning to the left to see that someone had rolled something into the theater. It was so wicked. It was like, good Lord, who decided to roll that in the middle of the theater? Oh, it's a special effect.
The funny thing is, it seems like so many movies don't make good use of surround sound. So when someone really does, it's like,
yeah,
this is
the
awesome.
Wall of sound that started with Batman, it depresses me. Yeah, there is an art to doing some really good sound. I used to get paid in the 90s to actually watch movies that had great sound effects and surround sound so I could demonstrate them at an Incredible Universe. So it was one of the greatest jobs ever. I got paid to watch movies to then go get them to put in multi-$1,000 home theater systems. You wonder why we do a show called EOL.
Yeah.
Indeed. Well, you know, in the 21st century, it is a completely different landscape in the assistive technology world. I mean, so much has changed and so many things are just arranged differently and consumers feel differently about things. And that is expressed really well in this article we have from Joe Orozco. The title of the article is The Human Error with Humanware. And he didn't write this to pick on Humanware specifically and say, oh, they're horrible. But he wrote this to make a very important point. He tells a story about how he really wanted the new Victor Reader Stream and was going to have to save up for a bit for it. And then it arrived surprisingly as a gift. And so he's like, woohoo. Well, something went wrong with the unit and he needed to send it back. And so he asked, can you go ahead and send me another one? I'm putting this one in the mail. Can we just do it that way? Can you send me one and you'll get this one back and everything will be great? Humanware responded, you know, no, we aren't going to do that. You're going to be without your device for a month or so, perhaps more, as we investigate what's going on, and we'll send it back to you once it's repaired. And his thought on this was that, you know, with many other mainstream companies, something goes wrong with your Dell, you're able to ship it in and they're overnighting you another one because they don't want you to be without your device. They understand that having this thing, you paid money for it, so it's important to you to have it. And he just says that for any AT company, not just Humanware, you have to keep in mind that your customers are your bread and butter and you're charging quite a bit for them to own your device. And you can't be lax about the things that make a company good, that being customer service and understanding that your people want to use what they've bought.
Yeah, I mean, this device is as great as it is. There's so much, I don't want to use the word controversy, but that's the only word that comes to my mind, about whether it's really needed. So many people are saying, you know what, I got my mainstream devices, I'm not going to buy a new Victor Reader Stream. And I would think that Humanware would kind of bend over backwards a little bit for someone who does want to use the device and who might actually say good things about it if it worked properly, to say, you know what, let's get this gentleman a working unit and we'll figure out what's going on here on our own time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's just it. You know, his point is that you, whoever you are, you can't afford to be lax in this area. There is so much competition in this space now that no one is the only game in town. And given that, you've got to be at the top of your game if you expect to stay with it.
Apple stores are a perfect example of that, where you are going in and they can form a personal relationship with you through your Apple ID, what you bought, how much you've done in the past, what technology you have. And if you have a question about said device, this is, you know, a place you can go to get answers. And that's part of the reason why Apple products cost more. I talk about this a lot on other shows, but you're doing this because if you have a problem with an Android phone, do I go back to Verizon? Do I go to Samsung? Da, 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 da. And this is kind of why Samsung is going to do 1,400 stores in various places, including all the Best Buys. So there's a Samsung store. You have a personal relationship with the brand and you get this kind of relief that you're looking for when you have problems with these devices, which are becoming more and more complex. You really can't afford to give someone the one up on you by not keeping that relationship going, right? So every opportunity also comes with every opportunity to lose. And you have to really look at that. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why we feel at Cerotech, being blind people ourselves, making software for blind individuals and selling to blind individuals matters to us, because we know what it's like for people to go through the situation. So we want to make it easier for people. And that's just the way we approach it too, not to spin this into what we do and how we do it. But that is kind of the philosophy behind us and our company, and why we do these podcasts. We're a part of the community, and we want to promote those in the community, even if they're not ourselves. So that way you have opportunities and choices.
And we get that mentioned on Twitter, that the customer service is one of the things that people like about what we do. So it's not just us saying that, it's the community saying that.
And we appreciate that. Thank you.
And the community has spoken over at WebAIM. The conversation on this particular survey is about low vision users. Guys, anything I can parse here for you? Was there anything surprising you learned from this survey?
Not really. I mean, I think it's I don't want to say it wasn't an interesting survey. It's just that I didn't see any surprises. I think that it is a good read for anybody who's curious about, you know, low vision users in general and what they use, what they prefer, what they don't, that kind of thing.
I just think these surveys are interesting. I'm glad WebAIM is doing them. I have participated in several, and I find the collection of statistics in this area and sharing them with the community a very good thing. So keep it up, WebAIM. Thanks for the great work.
I love the conversations about the text widgets and skip navigation, which I rarely use. It's very interesting because you can have in a developer community sometimes a drive to go in one direction as the way we should be doing it. And sometimes it does take the community to kind of come back and say, yeah, I didn't even know that option was there. Good to know. But we spent 2 weeks on that development. Okay.
Well, it's kind of like Aria, where I forget which survey it was, but a lot of the community is trying to educate developers and users about Aria. And a survey showed that most users didn't even know that their screen reader could navigate through Aria landmarks or what Aria did or anything like that. And so that is going to be a continued opportunity for people to educate, again, both developers and users, that, hey, this actually can be a very useful thing and people are kind of getting on board with it.
I feel bad for people who search now for Aria because all they get is links to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, well, it's spelled differently, luckily, but if you didn't know that.
That's to say that people know how to spell it and yes, that they will spell it correctly. Yeah, all right. No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Why am I learning so much about the Starks? This makes no sense.
What do you mean winter is coming? It's summer right now.
Winter is coming for the browser.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Game of Thrones browser coming to a computer near you. It has the logo of a lion. And
that's right.
All right. So
did we mention there's a new episode of EOL, episode 10, available?
You haven't, but you might as well. So just go ahead and get that over with.
I thought it would be a really good place. It's not in the show notes, but I think I'll just put it right here. Just saying. Yeah.
So we have talked about things changing in the assistive technology landscape. And here's another way in which that is so. Freedom Scientific announced that Jonathan Mosen is resigning his position there, and he's going to move on to do other things. You will still hear him for a while on the FS cast as they transition to other staff members doing that. But for the moment, you'll still hear him there. And you can also check him out at his site, mosen.org.
As someone who hosts a podcast, I can tell you, and I mean, everyone was familiar with Michael Loft's voice on this podcast, that is a tough act to follow because in the one hand, you kind of want to continue the style that person did, but on the other hand, you've got to be yourself, so you can't you can't be that person.
Says the man who followed several people on Main Menu.
This
you
is
know
true.
Nothing about Mr. direct Jeff comparisons, and, not at all.
That's
no,
right.
Nothing at all. No.
And so. I have to say that even though that's a really fine line to walk, Jamie, I think you did it really well in that you showed respect for the people who came before you, but you also were able to make it your own without saying, I'm going to be this person, even though I'm not.
Well, thank you. Well, for one thing, adopting the New Zealand accent would be a little difficult.
That would be a little tough to pull off, you know.
I can see that. Well, coming up after the break, we actually are going to discuss why Jamie is considering taking a year off of the internet, and how Ricky reminds me her memory is better than mine, and your feedback in the mailbag, all that and more on Serotalk 153.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Serotext DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Serotalk Podcast 153. We've talked a lot about Google Glass, and you know I'm hyped for it. And then there's this whole huge response of people who are jealous of those who have Google Glass and have created the term glass holes, which I think is very, very funny. But it is an actual term out there that you can search for. And there are people like Robert Scoble who are using them and some others. Leo Laporte in Twit404. Talks. I love the title of this website, not found, or podcast, not found.
Yeah,
that's great. They've talked a little bit about how they're used and how this is an early version of a product. It's not finished or fit, and what you can do and what you can't do with it. I'm still extremely excited about it. The more I learn about these things, but Eric Schmidt didn't help the world any. In fact, he probably gave Saturday Night Live a joke recently on their weekend update by saying it's kind of awkward to use Google Glass in the types of things that you can do, like winking and being able to do things with the camera, that it was meant to be that you didn't stand out, that you were wearing this device and that you weren't looking down at your navel, or like Jamie and your wife found out about praying, but they were really looking at their phones. It seems that some of these things that you might do could be seen as socially awkward, as said by the great Eric himself.
Well, I get that. And yeah, this stuff is actually pretty funny. But I feel like, you know, what is socially awkward anyway? Like, people are doing things that I still kind of consider socially unacceptable. Like, you take a phone call at the dinner table and you get all into some personal conversation and you're still sitting at the table and people are forced to listen to your side of the conversation. And so winking weirdly and stuff like that just doesn't even seem like that big of a deal to me. I feel like people have kind of lost, you know, a lot of social graces because of technology anyway.
Rage quitting on the bus. I've seen that, where somebody's got stuck on a game and almost broken a $400 phone, rage quitting.
Oh, man.
And you think they've got Tourette's, wow. You know, they're really just playing a game. I've had to turn to people, is that dude okay? Do we need to call 911? It's like, you know,
wow.
Agreed. I mean, I think the benefits of any new technology, it's hard to say. There are things that we would have thought were socially unacceptable before that just fall into the normality of today's lifestyle. It's just, I think there's something about not using a phone. There's something about the persistence of wearing glasses that is just over freaking everybody out. And that's really kind of crazy. I again, am looking forward to that. I was super depressed. They say on Twit that it's only in the right eye, that the heads-up display is only going to be over there. And my right eye is my blind side. That's a prosthetic. So that means I'll have to use these non-visually, which I guess is great for doing demonstrations. But that means I'll have to look at other ways to see how things are done on the menu visually, or watch other ways. And there are ways actually of already exporting the view out from it, I think, Bluetooth-wise. And great conversation on Twit. Definitely listen to that. I'm sure there's going to be more as these developer editions kind of start going, or excuse me, Explorer editions, because we're still probably about a year away from these being commercial. There are already applications being developed for the blind with these devices, and it's going to be very interesting. This is why I'm super, super jazzed about this technology.
Well, Glass isn't the only thing that Google is doing. They have just joined up with FIDO, which is the Fast ID Online Alliance. So the idea behind FIDO is that they're looking for better ways than passwords to protect online identities. And Google's jumping on board here and saying, yeah, you're right. We need to find a better way. And, you know, so lots of people are becoming a part of this alliance and looking at different and better ways to protect ourselves online.
Down with passwords, I say. Go ahead and scan my brain. I don't care.
Yep, scan my brain.
I'm tired of passwords. Yep.
Well, how do you feel about Apple if they come out with a thumbprint / fingerprint scanner thing as a two-factor authenticator? Would you be okay with putting your finger on a screen and Apple having your biometric password to go along with a credit card and other information it already has on you?
I don't know. I mean, pretty much. It's like, It depends on how they implement it. You know, law enforcement already has lots of fingerprints, and for some jobs you have to do that. You know, it's not just criminals who give their fingerprints. It's others as well. And my only concern, whether it's a brain scan or what have you, is what if there are times when you need to access somebody else's information? I'm thinking specifically about when I need to approve the installation of a new app for my son. I guess I have to be, you know, the person who does that. So then are you looking at two biometric bits of info? You know, here's him. He can use it based on what I've set up and allowed him to do and so on.
Kind of rolls back into, if someone passes away, do you want to remove their Facebook or something like that that we've talked about before? But I don't know. There is, slowly but surely, Social Security number was sacred. Remember, Your credit card number was sacred.
Nothing is sacred now.
Now parts about you is sacred. Yeah, nothing is sacred as far as identification goes.
I mean, you can't even check out at the counter at the grocery store. May I have your phone number, please? Why? Yeah. You know, you can't get past that because they want to, I guess, they use that as an account number.
Because we wanted to make sure we knew that you bought 5 boxes of Eggo S'mores Edition. So we can order more of those.
Oh, it's for my benefit. Okay. Well, anything else you need? You need my blood type? Is that going to
help? Sure. If you just step over here, ma'am, over in pharmacy, we'll actually also see what your blood pressure is like. It's an added bonus.
Do I get a cookie? Because I'm in if we get cookies and juice.
Well, let me go over to bakery and see if we can work out a cross promotion.
Awesome.
Speaking of benefits, how about the benefit of Google Now on iOS? That has arrived, correct?
It has, yes. And okay. I haven't had a chance to look at it. I'm really looking forward to it because I can do a direct comparison on my Nexus and on my phone.
Some people are saying that it's not super voiceover friendly initially and that there's some unlabeled buttons. Certainly those of us who already have Google Now have some advantage of knowing what the layout is kind of like and what information it's supposed to kick over. And like other things like Google Chrome and Google Books, initially those also were not very voiceover friendly, but became so later on. So it may be something that gets revived and resuscitated over time. And again, that reoccurring theme, Google Now is just awesome. You've heard me talk about it before. Google Now is neat in that you can have it sync up with your planes and your trains and your bus and
your
letting you know these things and how long it'll take you to get home. Well, I stopped short of that because we don't have automated, you know, autonomous vehicles yet. But I imagine at some point Google Glass will fit into that. There's been some interesting stuff about that. Google Cars take up like a gig a second in the type of topography and information that they take down, what it's like for them to plan out a turn. Those articles went up last week, as well as somebody said it was like the Terminator, the way that Google kind of looks at things and projects data and stuff, which I thought was kind of very strange, and did nothing to help you feel less scary about the Google autonomous vehicle. It looks at things like the Terminator. Yeah, that makes me feel much safer. Thank you, Google.
Skynet loves you. What are you going
to
do?
Well, it's the power of the cloud, right? Or so Microsoft wants you to think in their new version of Windows, possibly, hint, hint, called a word that I'm afraid to pronounce, Maharo. speech didn't help here, so I had to watch Windows Weekly.
No.
Windows Weekly, even Mary Jo kind of pauses before she says it. The idea is that Windows runs as a service from the cloud, and that doesn't seem too far off the mark, considering what they're doing with Office 2013 and the streaming bits down to you from Office to Go. Microsoft has put a lot into Azure and many of their cloud services. Even the Xbox is going to have a lot of cloud services tied to it in the upcoming rumored titled Xbox Fusion. There was also a rumor that it was going to be called Xbox Infinity, and that's going to be announced on May 21st. This does seem to be where Microsoft is going. They understand that box software is done, and I like the idea of logging in and just syncing everything online to my Windows account. Of course, we sort of do that already with SA2Go. So if I go to somebody else's computer and I want to check in with Ricky and Jamie and I want to do a whole bunch of other stuff, I can actually log in at SA2Go and get to all my preferences. Mm-hmm. And one of the great things about working here is that as long as I have the internet, I am able to log into work. One of the downsides about working here is as long as I have the internet, I can log into work and talk with everybody. But Microsoft does seem to be heading this way. And this is also taking a page from Google Chrome, where it kind of keeps things persistent if you're in the Google ecosystem. What do you think? You know, if you didn't want to necessarily jump from Windows 7 to Windows 8, but you needed to do some things in Windows 8, you could run it kind of virtualized from the cloud.
That'd be kind of neat. I still don't know how I feel about having my production OS, you know, always in the cloud, and that would be the only way that I could get to it or whatever. But I do like the idea of, rather than having to house a virtual machine on your own drive or whatever, you could just access something in a cloud that would have your preferences. And like you said, oh, I need to, you know, use a Windows 8 machine for testing, or I need to look at Windows 7 32-bit for some weird reason, just whatever, to be able to have that there. And eventually, maybe people will be using the OS, you know, strictly in this way, but I don't think we're there yet.
If you're a company and you wanted to keep your data private, it's like another way of VPNing in a way. All of that exists up here. Log in. You have your computer, you're in a Windows format that you're comfortable with, but yet it's not on your computer. And if you need to do anything, you can do it all within the network and all be up there.
Right. Your machine just acts as a terminal.
Yeah. Makes it cheaper if you're trying to do that, you know, to a small business, or that feature is really great in Windows 8, but I don't want to necessarily have to do that and upgrade all my hardware and on and on and on. In fact, now that we're talking about it, this really stinks for Dell and HP and a whole bunch of others, because all of that's done in the cloud where all the heavy lifting is done. So that means you could run a fairly decent powered machine from 3 years ago and be okay.
Yeah. From an assistive technology standpoint, though, if Microsoft decides to update stuff, you might be kind of in trouble if it breaks your assistive technology, though.
Yeah, it may not be so easy to roll back.
Well, speaking of changing things and updating, and looks like that iOS 7 may actually be a bit delayed, because Johnny Ive is really making some major changes, including to things such as calendar and mail. And our reports are that the development teams of both OS 10 and iOS are working together on this, and we'll surely know something by WWDC in June. At least have some sort of a preview of what's coming. But who knows when it might actually be released? Probably later on this fall is kind of the speculation, I think.
I have only one feeling here, is the conversation about this year's update to macOS 10.9 being a love letter to power users. That almost feels like this is the last version of OS you guys are ever going to like. I know that's just me reading into it, but it just feels like, with all the merges and how everybody didn't like some of the changes to Mountain Lion and some of the iOSification that had already started to happen, not my term, by the way, that's iMore. There was already kind of sort of a roll into these two merging, and that it just really feels like, okay, guys, you know, we love that you got us here, but we're going to make this change. And Final Cut Pro is a perfect example. The last version of Final Cut that was released was aimed at a more common lower end user than the high end community that had built up around Final Cut in television and movie editing. No. And oddly enough, as much as they reviewed it and said it stunk, sales for it were through the roof. And that just made Apple go, see, we had the right idea all along. Sorry, hardcore guys.
Let me buy some more.
Yeah, exactly. This tastes awful, well, but I'd really like another serving.
Really? Well, maybe you could talk about this when you sit down to coffee with Tim.
Yeah. Can we get some drum roll here, Timfany? Let's check the tote board and see how much we are at now. And... And...
What was it, like
$600,000?
$600,000.
Yeah. Man, that's a lot of money.
That better not be Folgers flavor crystals. I'm just saying.
No, sir. It better be, what is it, Jamaican Blue Mountain?
Yeah,
is
one of the Jamaican Blue Mountain, hand. Yes.
yeah.
Literally, Juan Valdez's donkey comes in and they grind them in front of you.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Mr. Burns saying, it's my coffee percolating. I stamped the beans myself.
Oh, man, this just gets crazier. Great for the charity, though. I mean, you know, awesome. That is what I think gets lost here in the numbers hyperbole, of course, but cool. You know, some charity's about to land a good bit of money, and I think that's awesome. And certainly, you know, if Eric Schmidt or Jeff Bezos or somebody else said, you know, I'll have coffee with you, it's not going to get 600 grand like Tim Cook. So
no.
Coming up after the break, we've got your user comments, and we say happy birthday, Web, here on Sarah Talk Podcast 153.
You might know me, I'm 50 Cent. You may follow my tweets, my Facebook friends. Odds are a few in 6 degrees separate us. We're that close. What's crazy is 1 in 6 don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends. Hunger's too close for us to ignore. So visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find your local food bank to see how you can make a difference. From one close friend to another, let's do this. I'm 50 Cent, and together we are Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 153. We have Ricky in a dunking booth, but we're not going to dunk her in water. We're going to dunk her into the mailbag.
There we go.
You really should have thought that out more before you thought of it, and B, you agreed to it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have considered that a little more carefully. I've never been dunked in mail before. It was just something to try.
We are not responsible for the paper cuts either, by the way. Those just come with the territory.
And there are lots of them. Man, those hurt.
Yeah.
But all for the show. You see the sacrifices I make.
You should just eat more weird food like I do for EOL. You should just.
Yeah, we eat books on EOL.
This is true.
Mailbag tastes different, though. I can attest to that.
Not like three types of Lay's potato chips. No.
Right. So first we have an iReport from Scott talking about the Kindle app, and he talks specifically about Braille.
This is Scott from New York with a comment for Zero Talk. This is a topic I'm sure you're covering this week, which is the accessibility of the Kindle app, and I'm going to actually relate it back to something that you talked about in the April 29th podcast. But I first wanted to share my experiences with you on this app. I am primarily a Braille reader. I don't really use a lot of speech. And the Kindle app offers the best reading experience for someone who's reading for leisure. The reason is that once you get into the Kindle app and the text, there's nothing around it like you have in iBooks and Nook. In those apps, there are content on each page, of course, but there's also things on either side of the text. So when you're reading with Braille, you will get to the end of the text on that page, and then you're taken into something totally different that has to do with the book, but not the text. So you have to scroll back and then turn the page. With the Kindle app, once you launch that book, the text is there on its own, and you can just hit space with O to keep going through the text. So it's a much nicer reading experience. The other comment, and this is relating back to last week's show, when you guys were discussing the differences between the iPad and the iPhone, is that some apps behave differently on the iPad than do on the iPhone. And again, I use the Kindle as an example. On the iPhone, when you do the equivalent of double tapping, you can go into the menu just fine and navigate around the book and do whatever it is you need to do. But apparently, from what I've read and what others have told me on the iPad, when you go to bring up that menu, you lose Braille support. So those are my comments. I am about out of the 2 minutes I'm allotted to record this thing. So you guys have a great show.
So there you go. I had actually never used the Nook app or iBooks with Braille, strangely enough. I always read in those apps just with speech. So I never noticed that there were, you know, little bits of stuff that you would have to scroll past every time you read something. Really, really nicely done, Amazon, for, you know, thinking that out and making sure that people didn't have to do that, because that's way more efficient.
And if you didn't need any more reasons to go follow Alina Roberts or Lisa Salinger on Twitter, you needed them last week, because, man, they started talking about Braille and reading from the Braille display on the Kindle app, and there was a lot of great information flying back and forth on both their Twitter feeds and Triple Click Home.
Yeah, I have a feeling Triple Click is going to talk about this app maybe just a little bit this month. I could be wrong,
yeah,
but
I think so.
I have a feeling it might make an appearance.
You sure? Because I thought they might talk about Google I.O.
They could.
We're doing that on that Android show. We'll just swap them. Maybe nobody will notice.
Who's going to know? Apple, Android, what's the difference?
We'll just release each show on the other feed. Yeah. Nobody will know.
Next up, we've got an iReport from Michael Barber.
This is Michael Barber, and I wanted to submit that Ricky was looking for color identifiers, which are good and which would do a good job. Strangely enough, I've been using TapTapC and have found that its color recognition has been almost 100%. And that's much better than any other color identifier app that I've found for the iPhone. So TapTapC is where it is as far as I'm concerned, at least for now.
That's great, Michael. I actually would not have thought about using TapTapC in that way. And I'm not really sure why. I guess because I figured that the human might say shirt or jeans or whatever. I didn't think about the fact that they might be descriptive enough to say, you know, that's what color this thing is, because a lot, and I guess I'm a little obsessive about this, I have a lot of color identification apps, but if you're in bad light or if there are shadows that you don't know about, then everything appears gray or blue-gray or whatever, even if it's purple or red or something, it just turns everything gray.
Yeah. Visually, that happens too. There's a certain amount of light you need in order to discern color, and it varies from men to women, and it also varies according to age, because you lose some of the ability to perceive color as you get older, especially dudes. This is why some women are much better at style than guys.
And last but not least, we got some information from Beth. She wants to thank us for both the indoor navigation discussion. Thank you, Lisa, specifically for some information you gave in that segment. And she also wants to say well done on the note taker segment, where Lisa and company talk about why note takers might still be relevant in some situations and why not. So again, she thanks us for that and mentions that when it comes to our big pizza party that we keep talking about having, make hers plain cheese. That ought to make things simple. So no anchovies, no olives, and I'm way behind that.
What?
No olives, ever. Just plain cheese.
Oh, man.
No. Again, so vile, you can rearrange olive to spell that.
How could you eat Greek food then? Greek food is just olive central.
Because
it's awesome.
It's different. If it's in hummus, then you don't have the bizarre olive texture. It's all in a nice paste that's olive flavored, but otherwise, no.
Mushrooms
and
are
olive
kind of
oil
the same
is fine
thing
as well.
And you like mushrooms?
No, mushrooms are totally different.
Okay, fine. All right, Jamie. Once again, this is your opportunity to put on the referee shirt here, and
I think we should have an online
blow
event,
this one
an accessible event. We should all order pizza respectively. And then eat it with our, you know, open microphones.
Yeah.
And discuss.
Actually, the pizza Ricky ordered at CSUN was huge. Oh my God. This thing was
and gigantic. Floppy. It was like insanely floppy, you know, and you, one piece was about the size of a personal pan pizza. So you try to pick it up and it's all flopping everywhere. And
you kind of needed a spatula under it just to be able to eat it, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
It was, it was really, really good. True. One of the few times you can actually find a Chicago-ish style pizza outside of Chicago.
Yeah. It was really good, but very, very messy.
That's funny because I'm having leftover pizza for lunch today, by the way.
All right.
Taco pizza. Yay.
Ooh, good taco stuff. Pizza. Mm. I could go for that.
From Pizza Hut. Nothing too exciting.
Nothing fancy.
Hey, it works.
All right.
You know, I got asked a lot about ordering Pizza Hut pizza on my Xbox 360 if I was going to do that for the show.
There's an
Xbox 360 app.
Yeah.
The only problem is that I live in such a small kind of place that I'm not even seen by Google Maps. I would do it.
That's a problem.
And you know, the irony is that Pizza Hut is actually less than 2 miles from my house. I could probably step out to the highway and you could see it from where I am. That's the irony. But thank you, mapping software. But I do want to, you know, Xbox, get me a pizza, you know, that kind of thing. That would be seriously interesting and fattening.
Well, bringing us back to reality, resources at serotalk.com is the address for you to send us your emails. Leave an iReport on your Android device or on your iPhone. Go to www.serotalk.com and check out the show notes for this, especially this podcast. There are a lot of resources and links that we were not able to talk about much anyway. And leave a comment on the blog while you're there. And yes, we do include blog comments. Go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast over there, and leave a review and rate us a really high rating, preferably, while you're there as well. It's time now for Roundabout. Well, this first story actually started about a year ago, and I remember hearing about this journalist, Paul Miller, who disconnected himself from the internet for 1 year. And continued to write, continued to do his work, but did every bit of it offline. And it's hard to believe, first of all, that that was a year ago. I had sort of kind of had this story in the back of my mind, wondered what we would learn, but the year is up and he is back on the internet. This story has kind of mixed emotions for me because this gentleman was sort of hoping for some fulfillment in his life, some happiness that he's kind of struggling to find, and he thought getting off the internet would provide that. And as it turns out, not so much. Ricky, what are your thoughts on this article?
This was a really, really awesome article because it talks about how he steps away from the internet and he's thinking, this will finally give me more of a chance to work on my novel because I won't be distracted by all this email and Twitter and blah, blah, blah. And I will be able to go out and take long walks, pay attention to nature, and get in shape, and so on. He did all of that initially, but as time went on, the same things that kept him from doing these things before, he was able to, if he were distracted before by email and Twitter or whatever, then he was able to just be distracted by playing a computer game or something like that. And so there were still things that he would do that distracted him from the things that he wanted to do. And one of the things that really kind of struck me was at the end of his, you know, offline journey, he sees his niece that he doesn't live near, and she's about 5 or whatever, and they're talking. And it turns out that she thinks, oh, well, he hasn't been Skyping with her because he didn't want to.
That's crazy.
And he realizes, I've just missed a year of connection with my niece in trying to stay offline and prove something to myself, when in reality, the internet is here. This is how people connect now. And the internet itself isn't the cause of problems. It's how you use it and whether you have the discipline to use it in a healthy way that is really the issue.
Yeah, so many people, I think, and I'm just going to say it, in my mom's generation, I mean, she kind of sees technology as evil, and I get it. I really do get why she thinks that, because, you know, you go to visit her and my dad, and if we're not careful, we're playing with our phones instead of putting them down and talking. And so she's not desensitized to that. She sees things that maybe the rest of us should pay a little more attention to. But at the same time, I love to tell the story about a couple years ago being on vacation and my friend was looking at news headlines on the internet. He and I were literally sitting on a street corner as our wives were shopping. And I'm thinking he's doing what men have done for generations, and that's reading the newspaper.
Yeah.
Just a different way.
Yeah. And you really hit it when you said, you know, there are things that we should pay a little closer attention to, like not playing with our phones when we're in a social situation or spending time with somebody. You know, then it's time to really fully be in the moment and enjoy that, unless you're enjoying, you know, playing a game together on your phones and that's kind of the interaction.
Right.
I think that people just need to be mindful about how they use technology, but I don't think it's inherently evil.
Went to the Alamo Draft House last week for Iron Man 3. It was actually a marathon, Iron Man 1, 2, Avengers, and Iron Man 3. And the reason why I went to the Alamo Draft House is because they are relentless about no texting, no phone calls. They remind you, they show you how to put your phone on vibrate, and they will escort you out. They're just serious about that. And it's, you know, movie geeks showing movies to others who are budding or already movie geeks. And I enjoy that. That's part of the reason why I'll pay a little bit more to go see a movie there, because they are just solid on this. And they actually famously did a PSA that they show in the theater about some girl who didn't know that this was the policy, and she got thrown out, and she called them later and left them this very nasty voicemail. But they actually play that voicemail and then explain, this is why we do it. We don't want you to do it. We want everybody to have a great time, so you come back here. And they're really, really good about that. And then I go to something like the drive-in, because there's a local drive-in not too far away. And that's the place where you could do that. I mean, you know, it's your own car. You have your own space, and you can do those kinds of things. And I often do. I'll tweet from there and stuff like that. But I would never do it in another situation. And I think that's it. Learning manners on how to use this technology is a big thing. The other part is I don't think as blind and low vision users, we really could do this, because so much of our stuff now is using the power of the cloud. I'm thinking Siri, which has to go back to the internet, and some other forms of voice dictation. I don't think that for us to get the benefits out of technology going forward, we could drop off the grid in the same way.
Definitely agree with that. It's funny because I have a Bible on my note taker. And I don't use it in church because it just seems like it would be look weird for me to be playing with my note taker, quote unquote, in church. And rather than getting up and explaining to the entire congregation, this is what I'm doing. I've just chosen not to do it, but
that's a very
I'm basically giving up a resource.
If you're using,
if
you're using a Braille note or Braille device, people don't know really what that is, right?
No.
So you could kind of
even if you're reading a menu in a restaurant with your phone, you know, I've thought about this a lot recently because it had always been something that the menu would have to be read to me when I was going out with other people. And whether that was by wait staff or by my companions, that was always something that had to be done. And it meant that if they're reading the menu, this is kind of not a chance to just sit and hang out and talk. So now I will multitask in the same way that I think everyone else does, where they're looking down at the menu, but they're also going blah, 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 blah. But I'm wondering if it looks more rude for me to be doing it, like I'm playing with my phone, than other people just reading the menu as they talk.
Exactly. Right. Because you might not necessarily be tilting your head downward looking directly at your phone.
Right. But I have an earbud or earbuds in, and people can see that, and they have no idea what I'm doing except that I'm touching my phone.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are people with Bluetooth. I've seen people try to initiate conversations with others wearing Bluetooth headsets, you know, when they start going, hello, and they have to point at their ear to let others know, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking on the phone, right? Some people will miss that. It used to happen on the bus when I would ride back and forth to work. I would be listening to something on my Book Sense and people didn't understand that I was just not paying attention to them because I had my Oakleys on and some other stuff. And yeah. So you didn't really. Yeah. So they don't look. I've had to ask people. I was like, can't they clearly see? I've got things coming out of my ear. No, honestly, dude, no, people don't. And I was like, oh, okay. Hmm. Yeah. But, you know, getting back again to people might not think about you using a proprietary, you know, blindness device versus an eye device. What if they had a policy at this restaurant because they're tired of people giving them bad reviews on Yelp? No, don't use your cell. We ask you not to use your cell phone. We don't want you taking pictures of our food and posting it. And, you know, there are more and more places because of Google Glass and other things that are asking you, hey, you know, don't pull that out. What if you wanted to review something in the locker room at a fitness club? You're not supposed to use those devices openly there. So there are times where mainstream technology that we rely on could actually be perceived as socially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Wow, didn't expect that conversation. Okay.
No.
Happy birthday, Internet, or somewhat. The first web kind of publicly made website was spawned about 20 years ago, and it was actually recently unearthed and put back at its original URL. Remember that this is, when we say the Internet, people get kind of confused. The Internet has existed for a lot longer than that, but the way that we kind of perceive it with web pages and publicly available to everybody to use outside of the government and universities who first started the Internet is a little different. Back in our day, when we first started using modems in the 80s, we went to these things called BBBSs. And those weren't necessarily the Internet. In fact, I remember when it was amazing that AOL actually let you go and use the World Wide Web. You actually could get out of AOL to get information.
Yeah.
That was a big thing. That was a long time ago, and you know, you guys probably remember it better than I do. Seeing how I am a low, you know, vision type guy, you guys generally have better memories than me, right?
Yeah.
You can remember all our faux pas and all the mistakes we've made just during this podcast to remind me and another podcast.
I remember it all perfectly. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, maybe not. There might have been one thing that I didn't remember, but I've forgotten what it is. Turns out that congenitally blind people, at least in this particular study, have better memories than those who were either blind later in life or were sighted. They would give each of these groups a list of words, and the congenitally blind folks were able to more accurately remember that list. The other people would remember words that sounded similar, but weren't necessarily that word, or maybe words that expressed the same concept, but, you know, it wasn't the same word as was presented on the list. And I kind of wonder why this is. I wonder if it comes from some behavioral things or things that have been necessary for blind people to do. Like, I remember growing up and taking the school achievement tests or whatever, and I had to have a reader. They did not have these in Braille when I was growing up. And so a person would read a question, and sometimes they were verbal questions or lists of words, and I would have to remember very clearly what they said in order to answer the question. Otherwise, I would be asking them to read three or four times. So again, I wonder how much of this is just kind of forced by environment, or how much is, well, the brain isn't using that section of itself for visual stuff, so it got repurposed for memory. I don't know.
The thing I thought was interesting was the discussion about if you gave people with sight several words, like, and I can't remember the exact example, smoke and flame and sirens, they would come up with the word fire, which was not one of the words that they were actually given. But blind people did not do that as much.
Right. They actually just remembered what was on the list.
Yeah.
In my public speaking tours, I often explain how you approach text on a Braille display and why things are very important, and how the interpretation of just putting it there does not mean that if it's in Braille, it does not mean that you can get to the same information the same way a sighted person would. And sighted people make that kind of misconception when doing so, because we started off looking at things in symbols and then later turned them into letters. And when somebody who's, and I'm being very general here, I'm not trying to say in all situations, but if I give someone who has cited a page and I tell them to find the word dog, they're going to skim that page and look for the physical outline of D with a curly, you know, with a stick, a straight up on D and a curly Q on the G. At that point, they're looking for a symbol. They're not looking for the word D, you know, with the letters D or G.
Right, right.
And mm-hmm. so if I asked you guys to look up the word dog, you're going to double check and make sure it wasn't dogma. You may even read the sentence mm-hmm. above and below for the context, you know? So it's a different way of perception. The voice app, I'm sorry, V-O-I-C-E, it's mm-hmm. speech getting in the way there. The voice app and Seeing with Sound on Twitter, there is a lot of conversation there about perceptual way that the brain interprets information and what visually can happen. And pictures just take up a lot more data, right? If you did a video podcast, it's a lot more because it's than just the audio, because the audio is just a real simple track. Video is a lot more involved, and sighted people generally have a tendency to want to interact with something in video. Even if they don't look at it all the time, they want to have the option to be able to look at that because they're making direct connections with the individual. It's making connection with eye contact. Why some people don't want to get rid of their real eyes is because they're afraid that prosthetics might actually keep them from interacting with other people because their eyes don't move and track the way that, you know, regular eyes did when they were sighted. I've seen that when I was in vocational rehabilitation with people who lost their vision later in life, that they would actually have hangups or personal perceptions of the way that they saw blind people before they then lost their vision. So there's a lot of information that's probably stored there. Like they don't remember, you know, certain ways to get to something where we are remembering, okay, that's 32 steps and here's this, you know, ramp down. They're remembering, I'm looking for the McDonald's. I'm looking for the McDonald's. I know yeah. it's somewhere near here, but I've got to find this McDonald's. I can't begin my idea of being able to find your friend's house until I know we find this doggone McDonald's. And then visually, when they have that landmark, they can put all the rest of it together. We think in grids. We think in steps and patterns. Mobility is really different.
Well, one thing we want you to remember is how to get a hold of us, because we definitely want to hear from you. Actually, coming up after the news, I'm going to give you a quick demo of using DocuScan Plus on the Mac and sending a document to your Amazon Kindle app. Yes, you can, in fact, do that, and I'll show you how right after we finish up right here. Again, resources at serotalk.com, and leave us an iReport on your Android device or on your iPhone. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Jamie Pauls, and today I would like to talk to you about sending a document to Kindle using DocuScan Plus on the Mac. In my case, I'm going to be sending the document to my Kindle app on my iPhone. You can obtain DocuScan Plus right from the Mac App Store. You go and just simply search for DocuScan Plus, and the app is free. You do need an account with Serotech. You can simply purchase DocuScan Plus, or you can obtain DocuScan Plus as part of our Accessibility Anywhere package. Definitely several options there. Go to serotech.com and check that out, or just docuscanplus.com and learn about that. So I do have an account, and I'm going to open my applications folder with Command-Shift-A.
Applications, now in Applications window, List View, Table.
And because I know what I'm looking for, I'm not going to interact with the table. I'm just going to type DOC.
DocuScan Plus dot app application. Today 1, 4.
And that's exactly what I want. So I'm going to do Command O to open the application.
Open. DocuScan Plus. DocuScan Plus window. New document button has keyboard focus.
It may take a little while for the program to load, so be patient. The first time it opens, you will be asked to sign in. So if you, for example, have purchased DocuScan Plus or one of our other packages, you'll have a username and PIN, and you'll just need to enter that information, just like logging into SAMNet if you've ever done that. It's quite simple. Once you're logged in, it will remember this information, and when you come back, you will be placed where I was just now. So I'm currently on the new document button. I'm going to VO right arrow.
Manage documents button.
To manage documents, and I'm going to VO spacebar on that.
Press manage documents button.
For a while, I was scanning Sunday school lessons and bringing them into DocuScan Plus and was loading them onto a Braille display, a refreshable Braille display. So I have several of those. Let's interact with this table.
Interact with name table, row 1 of 23.
And let's find one of those.
Name, April 20, Bria User Guide, June 22, Lesson 1204.
Oh, that sounds pretty promising. So I will stop interacting with that.
Stop interacting with name table.
And right arrow over, or VO right arrow.
Open default button.
Let's go ahead and open that.
Press open default button. Now in lesson 1204 window, HTML content.
And of course, if we interact with the HTML content.
Interact with HTML content. Study truths for Christian living 1, 2, 3, John and Jude group. Study truths for Christian living 1, 2.
And we can look through this document a bit.
Heading level 1, study text. 1 John 1, 1 through 2, 2. Heading level 1, focus.
All right, so you get the idea. It's really there. I'm going to stop interacting with the HTML area, with the contents of the document itself.
Stop interacting with HTML content.
And I'm going to right arrow, I keep saying that incorrectly, VO right arrow, over.
Email button.
Don't want to email it.
Send to Kindle button.
But I do want to send it to Kindle. So let me do a VO spacebar on that.
Press send to Kindle button. Now in send to Kindle window. What is the email address of your Kindle? Edit text.
If you're like me, you may not have even realized that you had a send to Kindle email address. No problem. If you don't know what it is, go into the Kindle app, go into settings, and right past the library sort order, you will find this email address. So I'm going to type it in. I'm not going to let you hear it. And then I will VO right arrow.
What email address are you using the from header when sending to your Kindle?
So now it's asking for my personal email address. That's already typed in. I'm going to VO right arrow past that. Incidentally, I typed it in, so it was not there by default or was not automatically filled in. I had just earlier typed the contents in.
Email, default button.
And get to the email button.
Press email, default button. Now in lesson 120, success. The document has been sent.
And if we VO right arrow?
Okay, default button. Now in lesson 1204 window, send to Kindle button.
And we're back in our document. All right, so in just a few moments, we will see it on the Kindle app, and we will take a look at opening and viewing it from there. And I have confirmed that, in fact, the document is now there. It didn't take very long for it to arrive. I would assume that if you sent a 600-page novel, it would probably take quite a while. If you send a short little, I don't know, 6-8-page Sunday school lesson, it's not going to take long at all. So let's go ahead and take a look in the app.
Kindle.
Double open it up.
Kindle. All items. Button. Open for more options.
Going to take a look at all items.
Lesson 1204. Jamie Paul's at .net. New. Book downloaded.
And right
double
there
tap to open book.
There is the book. Actually, the lesson in this case. It's the first one in the list. If I flick left.
All items. Button.
There, I mean, so that's
open for lesson 1200.
It's the most recent, so that makes sense. If we double tap it.
Menu off. Double tap for menu. Swipe two fingers down for continuous reading. Tap. Tap and hold to select text.
And let's
study AA truths for Christian living. 1, 2, 3, John and Jude. Study text 1 John 1, 1 through 2. 2 focus to consider the nature and
I think you get the point. It's there, and it's that simple. Nothing to it. So go grab a demo of DocuScan Plus, check it out. Look at some of our other packages if you're interested. Our Accessibility Anywhere package. Go to serotech.com and read all about what we have to offer. But however you go about it, grab DocuScan Plus, scan away. Scan a PDF, scan a document of your choice, and send it to the Kindle app and enjoy. For the Serotalk podcast, I'm Jamie Pauls.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.